It's the State Capitol Report on the Joy Cardine program. John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of WPR. In this half hour of the State Capitol Report, we'll turn our attention to mental health. A rare set of bipartisan measures passed the state Senate with near unanimous support last week. Mental health reforms that would add funding, create programs, and seem to improve access for those in need of treatment. Governor Walker has signaled he will sign the bills into law. Well, we're going to talk about the impact of these bills and what else might be needed in Wisconsin with a mental health advocate. My guest is Julianne Carbon, Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness Wisconsin Chapter. Good morning, Julianne. Welcome to the Joy Cardine program.
Good morning to you, John. Thank you.
So first of all, tell us a little bit about your organization, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, as it's also known. What does your organization focus on, and what do you try to accomplish on behalf of the mentally ill?
Yeah, so NAMI is part of the nation's largest grassroots organization that's working on mental health advocacy, education, and support. And so here in Wisconsin, we have about 2,500 members throughout the state, and so our organization represents the voice of family members, of individuals who are personally affected by mental illness, and the professionals and individuals who support them. And so we provide a variety of education and outreach programs. Here in Wisconsin, we have 35 local chapters, or we call them affiliates, that are providing, services throughout the state. And we, of course, do a lot of advocacy work at the state level, working to mobilize our grassroots network to influence policy and legislation.
Well, talk about how we're doing on mental health in Wisconsin. How big a problem is this in the Badger State?
Unfortunately, the state of our mental health care system is quite fragmented and quite broken here in Wisconsin. And what's unfortunate is that we really used to be a leader in mental health treatment. There are many, treatments and interventions and models that were developed right here in Wisconsin that had a lot of research behind them to prove that they were effective, and they were models that went on to be replicated all over the world. And so we really have this strong history of being a leader in the field of mental health. But unfortunately, because of, decreased funding, or I guess more often stagnant funding, our system really is quite broken. And so what we're seeing is that people are not able to access the treatment that they need when they need it. And so people are getting more sick. They're getting further along in their illness, which makes it harder to treat, and they're ending up in more costly institutions such as our jails and our prisons and our hospitals. We see that mental health services are just being overrun with people needing the services, and so what we're seeing are long wait lists. People are being denied because the threshold for being able to access services has gotten higher, and so we're really only just able to serve in the community people who are kind of the most ill, the most severely ill. And so early intervention and prevention those services have really fallen by the wayside over the last, 10 plus years. And so our advocates really have been calling for some massive reforms.
We'll get to those reforms in just a moment. Are there some parts of the state where the need is greater than in others?
There are, and because in Wisconsin we have a county-based system, it really varies based on where you live in the state. And so because counties have the authority to set their own level of services depending on the resources they have available, as well as the priority that they place on mental health care, the services really are varied. And so you'll see that in certain parts of the state, in more rural areas, for example, the mental health services are a lot more difficult to access. I mean, there are many contributing factors, transportation and things like that. But certainly if people are living in more rural areas in the state, their access is even more difficult.
What are the consequences of not meeting these needs? If we do nothing, what's going to happen?
Well, you know, unfortunately, people do end up in our prison system, our jail system, in our hospital system. So if we're not paying for front-end community-based services, we're paying for it somewhere. And so from a financial perspective, it makes sense to fund upfront community-based preventative services, but also from a humane perspective. I mean, there any other illness, cancer, diabetes, we would offer preventative upfront care, and so mental illness really should be no exception. People deserve the treatment to address the illness that they have.
Now, the state Senate passed a dozen bills last week, creating new programs, adding money to existing programs, and creating a comprehensive report on what resources each county is providing. And there were some other things in there, too. The governor has indicated he will sign these measures. Most of these were passed with near unanimous votes. Which of these things that the legislature did last week will produce the biggest benefits, do you think?
Well, it's, I think as a package, it is really where we'll see the impact, because they really did take care to include a variety of different bills and different legislation that includes support for peer-run services, for youth and early intervention, as well as rural outreach and crisis, mobile crisis units, training for law enforcement. So really, the fact that there's some funding for all of these areas is what makes this really, really hopeful that this will help our system, help to rebuild our system.
One of the bills created funding for 12 new physicians and 12 new psychiatrists to practice in rural areas. Why is this so important?
Well, again, as we mentioned, as a county-based system, there really is a shortage of child psychiatrists, especially in those rural parts of the state. And so the fact that this provides an incentive for psychiatrists to practice in those parts of the state will, hopefully increase the access that our youth have to receiving early care.
And another of the bills speeds up the process, allowing people to involuntarily commit someone to an institution. Is this a good step?
It's interesting that you bring that one up. That is one of the bills that our organization at NAMI, was not in full support of, but a lot of the advocates that we work in partnership with, are in support of it. It's a challenging bill, and I don't know that it necessarily speeds up the process for people to be able to go through a Chapter 51 commitment. My understanding of the bill is that it introduces another option for people if their initial review is not moved through the Corporation Council. And so this allows people to still file with a court. So it doesn't necessarily speed up the process, and we really don't know what the implications will be. But yes, that was one of the bills included in the package.
Well, we're going to continue our discussion of what the legislature did regarding mental health in Wisconsin as we move along here. I want to just let people know that they can join the program at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. What's your take on mental health? The mental health bills passed last week. Should the state spend more money on the treatment for the mentally ill? And what's needed to help improve access to treatment, do you think? What could we do more? And that's certainly a question, Julianne Carbon, I'm going to be asking you after we take a break. But I'm interested in what our listeners think at 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or find us on Facebook. Look for the Joy Cardine program on Facebook and leave your comment or question there. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the State Capitol Report. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. We're talking about mental health in this half of the program, with Julianne Carbon, Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Health, Mental Illness, Wisconsin Chapter, and with you at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. The state legislature passed 12 and even dozen bills last week dealing with mental illness with near unanimous support. Both Democrats and Republicans are behind this effort. Lots of different things. We've been talking about some of them. And another bill that they passed last week, the governor is expected to sign all of them. Another bill would create child psychiatry consultation programs that could expand access to child psychiatrists. I believe, Julianne, you mentioned this. The mental health needs for children are different from adults. Could you explain why that is and what we need to be doing for kids?
Certainly. Well, with our youth, the treatment and the services that they provide have to be very well integrated with the school system and the other care and providers. And so with, like any illness, the earlier we are able to identify the early warning signs and able to provide interventions and supports, the more successful we see that people are. And so with youth, it's really the importance of having community-based wraparound care is even more so important. So engaging family members and teachers and school systems that these kids are in contact with.
Let's take a call from Laura in Madison. Laura, good morning.
Hi. I'm curious about the peer support portion of this legislation. I know NAMI has offered peer support for years. It's kind of the basis of what NAMI does for the community. And I'm wondering about this program of peer support, just how proven is the new model for peer support? What kind of benefits does it offer? Can they get people in for meds? Are they supervised by professionals? What are the advantages of this new tier that they've added? It just seems to be at the convenience of the insurers, actually.
Laura, thanks for the call. Julianne?
Yes, and the caller makes a really great point that peer-run support has been something that certainly NAMI and other mental health providers have been offering very informally for years. So this is a really exciting step to see that legislation and funding are moving forward with supporting and legitimizing and validating the role that peer support plays.
Could you define peer support, please?
Yes. So peer support is people who have personally experienced a mental illness go through a training curriculum and then are on the provider end. So they are then in a support role helping people who are experiencing mental illness. And so they're integrated into many different treatment settings.
Mm-hmm. Laura, thanks for the call. So what would the new legislation that was passed last week do to support this effort?
Yeah, there were two main pieces that include peer run. The first is the peer run respite, so providing funds to allow peer run organizations to help provide respite care. The other piece, which is really exciting, is the IPS, or Individual Placement and Supported Employment. And this is a research-based program that helps people with mental illnesses find and maintain competitive employment.
Okay. Let's take a call from Ken in Eau Claire next. Ken, good morning.
Good morning. A comment and then a question. As you were talking about costs, you know, the cost of institutionalization versus the cost of prevention and so forth, it seems to me that one of the greatest costs is something that probably can't be measured directly financially, but that's the cost to families and social structures. That if we don't address these things early on, there's a high cost to be paid. The question is, I'm actually on the road just passing Eau Claire, but I live in northwest Wisconsin in a rural community. My little village is a population of about 1,000. And our closest hospital that had the ability to provide a short-term treatment just within the last year closed their mental health unit because of financial reasons. And now if the police are called and someone needs to be transported to a short-term treatment, hospital-based short-term treatment, they have to be taken several hours away. does the bill provide funding for hospital-based short-term treatment in rural Wisconsin?
Julianne?
Yeah, so the caller brings up a number of important points that I do want to just address. Are, you know, certainly that cost to the family and the social structure. NAMI is a family consumer organization, and so we hear those calls every day that people are not getting the kind of treatment they need, and it takes a toll on all of us. Also, the point that he made about hospitals closing in rural areas. This really is a trend that it's expensive and it's difficult for rural communities to operate hospitals. And so I don't believe that this legislation builds in hospital care, but there are other measures to help provide that again preventative intervention. So they have mobile crisis units, which is a piece that has been built in, which essentially is a trained team that can go out into the community to help provide an intervention. The other piece that he mentioned about the police, you know, unfortunately, mental illness is one of the few illnesses where when someone is having exhibiting symptoms, instead of calling an ambulance, we call the police. And one of the very important pieces that was built into this legislation is additional training for law enforcement. It's the crisis intervention team training, and it's a really intensive training for first responders to help law enforcement know how to better respond to people who are experiencing a mental health crisis, with the hopes that they can bring them back to their community treatment team as opposed to, you know, jail or hospitalization. But it's a very difficult challenge that as a state we have to figure out how to address, that families are having to travel hours to see their loved ones in the hospital.
Ken, thanks so much for sharing your story with us this morning. Of the dozen pieces of legislation, are there any measures that you disagree with? We did touch a little bit on your feeling about the commitment process, but anything else in there that the legislature passed this week that you weren't too happy about?
You know, one of the pieces that our organization wasn't in full support of was the mental health care coordination bill, which called for greater, to loosen the standards of privacy for sharing of medical information. And again, we get calls here at NAMI weekly where people feel as though they've been discriminated against because doctors or physicians have seen that they have mental health items in their charts, medications, things like that. And so really we just don't know. You know, our concern is that we don't know what the implications of loosening those standards are. And so that was the only other piece that we weren't in full support of.
So a dozen pieces of legislation passed this past week. Governor says he'll sign them. Do you know of any other bills that are in the pipeline that the legislature may act on in the near future?
I don't. You know, I think these ones it was really exciting to see these 12 come through with the funding attached to them. It was a very exciting time for the mental health community.
And what do we still need to do? I mean, we made some progress this week. You've pointed that out. If you were able to speak directly to the legislative leadership in the state of Wisconsin, what would you tell them that we still need to do?
Well, this is a step in the right direction, and what we are hoping to accomplish is to rebuild our mental health system. And so, you know, we hope that they continue to engage us in the dialogue. That's been one of the things that has been really fantastic about this whole process, is that the legislature really has come forward and they've brought in the community, stakeholders, family members, advocates, to be part of the discussion. And so we hope that they will continue to engage us to figure out ways that we can continue to build on this community-based system of care. It's a step in the right direction, but we still have a lot to do.
Well, one of the areas we probably still need to make a lot of progress in on, and we've just got a minute or two left in the program, but there's a stigma surrounding mental illness, which may prevent some people from getting help.
Absolutely, and that's it's a major barrier, and you know, stigma, that sense that there's some shame or blame associated with having a mental illness is a major barrier, and there was some pieces of this of the legislation included, you know, stigma reduction efforts or education efforts, and there's a statewide coalition that's really working on reducing mental health stigma through the use of personal story. What we know that is if people have contact with someone who experiences a mental illness, they their understanding increases and the kind of prejudice they have against people decrease. And so that's a major part. And we're hoping the fact that this is getting so much great publicity is opening that conversation about what it means for people personally affected and what it means for us as family members who are affected by mental illness.
Well, it seems to me a great place to end our conversation this morning. Julianne Carbon, thank you so much for being my guest this morning on the Joy Cardine Show.
Great. Well, thank you for having me on.
Julianne is Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Wisconsin chapter. This program was produced by Christy Taylor. Cynthia Schuster is the director, and we had on-air production from Robin Cherry this morning. Reminder, coming up after the news in just a moment, we'll be talking to the author of the book, Big Fat Crisis, about how the food industry isn't doing us any favors in the fight against fat. Stick around for that. Hopefully not with a donut. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.